Hey everybody, and welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we are following up on a riff that Cineprov did at the beginning part of the month on Dick Tracy. Now, if you have not seen Dick Tracy or heard the riff before, it is Madonna, Warren Beatty, and you should join our Patreon or pay $5 to Cineprov to get a copy of that riff. It was good. For the riff, we have a lot of Cineprov people. Fitzy, Evan, and Candace are on panel with me talking about the movie. But honestly, guys, we had a blast. This is a great show, and I hope you enjoy it. If you have not followed us yet on Patreon, you should. For $5, you get an extra riff a month and an extra mission briefing every other month, plus a, you know, thing we write once a month. If you go to $10, you get all the riffs backwards and forwards, and we've been putting out a riff a month. So that's pretty good. And thanks for all the support you give us. On Facebook, Twitter, Letterboxd, wherever. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. If you haven't been paying attention, this is part two of our Dick Tracy epic with our Cineprov crew, in which part one was on our Patreon and our Cineprov feed, where we riffed the movie.
You could potentially watch it in the opposite order if you really wanted to. I don't want to label parts.
Well, based on how much Larry has been like cheesing his steaks, this probably will come out first on the Cineprov feed.
Yes.
But regardless, the Cineprov crew is back without the person who makes us feel uncomfortable to watch rape scenes. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood, Myopia Movies, Cineprov Riffer, and on panel we've got...
I'm Candace, and Nick just hit me.
I'm Christine. I'm also on Socialite Life.
I'm Evan, and Nick somehow just hit me even though I'm sitting 10 feet across. Stop it!
It's okay. I'm a stretcher. I'm stronger.
He is. He's a. Honestly, if I were to describe Dr. Nick Hoffman as anything, fine. It would be a live-action Stretch Armstrong action figure.
My anonymity has been broken. I'm kidding. So tonight we watch 1990s Dick Tracy starring...
everyone.
Everyone you've ever heard of. Dustin Hoffman, Warren Beatty, and Madonna.
TV's Madonna.
TV's Madonna. Yeah. Pornography's Madonna. Album's Madonna. This is the same year as Like a Virgin, I believe.
It is, yeah.
Yes. And all together...
is it Like a Prayer? No. No, it is not. Also... not the same thing.
This movie needs a prayer.
It does. Amen.
Based on the like comic strip from the 40s and disappointment. On the other hand, it's also a lot like 300.
Before we like really dissect this movie, I really, really want to give this movie props for looking the way it should. And I think more movies visually need to take cues from Dick Tracy.
I will give credit where credit's due for miniatures and matte paintings and no CGI. And it looks like a thing that Candace looks like she's about to punch one of our male panelists in the
pants. That's me! Oh, God!
No, that's a happy face. I love miniatures. I love matte paintings. And I will also agree that give credit where credit's due. And that is Danny Elfman is a god.
Yes. This movie looks and sounds like it should. It's almost, from that particular perspective, too good to be true.
Sure.
Like, when you read, if say you're a Dick Tracy fan, this movie, aesthetically, is exactly what I imagine would be in a Dick Tracy fan's head, right? And there are not a lot of movies, I feel, that accomplish that particular
So feat. There you are, cracking into the skull of, this is 90, so a... 55-year-old man trying to figure out what's going on.
It's just it fills those gaps of fantasy visually, right? I think an interesting perspective to look at this is I'm a big like comic book and particularly manga fan, right? But if you compare this to like
hentai,
so many tentacles.
That's art, and I like that too. Thank you, Samuel Jackson. But like, if you watch any adaptation of those movies. Or of those particular comics, they don't do a good job of that. But if you watch, like, say, anime adapting a manga, right? Like, you get, like, these hyper... you get these, like... Say you're a big One Piece.
Okay, no, right? Here's the problem you're referring to.
Sure.
Akira was a masterpiece, and everyone gets it wrong. Right? Like, that's what it is. It's like hyper-stylized, but they don't understand what is going on.
Absolutely the word I'm looking for. Right? Like, okay, so let me break down a manga or comic I really like. There's one called One Piece, right? And part of the reason the art works is because the action is all stretched and skewed and pushed to a very weird degree, right? Like, if somebody punches someone, that's not going to equate to if you just showed a guy punching someone, right? Like, the artist stretches it and skews it in the same way that this movie hyper stylizes, like, outfits and things like that, right? I think that is a necessary thing to bring kind of the imagination of comic books to life. You know what I mean?
Yes, but before you keep talking with your beautiful mouth...
Which I will.
Can anyone give us a plot synopsis of this movie?
Uh-uh. I give you the first third and the back third, but that middle third is just a fucking mess.
Because when she walked by, everyone talked about her back third.
Madonna?
There's some very disfigured gentlemen who all wear very large shoulder pad suits, and they're all kind of against Dick Tracy for some reason. And Dick Tracy is very fascinated with some orphan child.
Called the child.
Called the child. The kid.
No, his name's Grogu.
He's the kid. And, you know, he goes on to sing karaoke in Can't Hardly Wait. So
right.
Yes.
Yeah. And Hook.
So, true. He's in Hook. He's gone on to good things. And, you know, he has no sexual chemistry with...
kid or Dick Tracy?
Madonna Monroe. And, oh, wait. Madonna Lynn Monroe. Madonna.
I will say they have sexual chemistry.
That's Breathless Mahoney.
That's her name, but I'm not certain I can stand by her having sexual chemistry with.
I mean, they were having sex.
She's got
sexual
chemistry because she's Madonna, but.
Yeah, right.
Oh, shit. Was I watching the 1945 film?
Oopsies. Oopsie doodles.
So here's where the movie starts to kind of break apart for me. I don't know what the rub between Dick Tracy and the bad guys is. And I literally. Not less than an hour ago, finished this movie. We all watched this again.
Okay. Y'all were doing a horrible job. Let me give you a better synopsis.
Well, please. First of all, I want to say you're doing it in the wrong order because this is LA Confidential, but this is like the Weird Al version of LA Confidential.
It is. I don't know what the problem. Here's the thing. The movie doesn't super matter because they're bad guys and Dick Tracy's a good guy. And
exactly.
And that's sort of all the setup you need.
So here's the canon. Is that Dick Tracy is a detective. And he's always fighting bad guys.
Yes.
Okay, that's the backstory.
Which is it's
fine. In this film, he's searching for evidence that proves that Big Boy Caprice is the city's most dangerous crime boss. And he may have found the key to unraveling this illegal empire through Breathless Mahoney, who's Madonna, because she has witnessed multiple crimes, and he has her on the hook for knowing that she was there because of the earring that he found. And however, she's more set on stealing Dick Tracy's heart than helping him solve the crime and proving the case of his career.
Okay, didn't get any of that. But I will say, I think in that way, it might actually be a good adaptation. Because if you're someone who is reading this comic week to week, say you miss a couple of weeks or you're just tuning in, you need to be able to kind of tune in any second and be like, okay, Dick Tracy is a good guy and he's just trying to figure out the bad guys, and the bad guys have a mysterious...
There's no long arc here. This is the right. X-File monster of the week kind of thing.
Right, it is a monster of the week in a movie.
It's an open and shut case. It's here's bad guys, I'm going to fight you. I'm going to punch one of you, but all of you fall over.
That is the best scene in the movie.
You got really excited during that time.
I did. I think, again, there's so much about the direction. And like I said earlier, the visuals of this movie that are, kind of unbelievable. We have not seen a movie, other than maybe, Spider-Verse and live-action Speed Racer, that really kind of matched this movie in terms of, comic aesthetic.
Yeah, I mean... I got to tell you, it reminds me of every 1989, 1990s film at that time. Yes, they all
Batman,
had this.
Batman's also up there.
Yes,
Batman.
They all had this look about
came
them.
First.
Yeah.
Batman
well,
did
true,
come
true.
First. So, but a lot of films had this look about them. But I like it. I like that over-ridiculous, everything looks like a Lego color kind of
a lot of primary colors.
There's a lot of primary colors going on. And I got to tell you, I think the top thing about this movie is that right now you could go to a convention, cosplay one of those characters, and people would know immediately where you're from.
Yeah.
And that's how you know you have a blockbuster, is if someone can immediately know what movie you're from.
I would kill, speaking of blockbusters, I would kill for more Marvel movies or any of those superhero movies to look like this movie. Because the problem I have with those superhero movies is they look more like action generic war movies.
They're too clean.
Right.
Yeah.
I want prosthetics that make a guy look like he has a little face. You know what I mean? Like
big
more
face.
Because that's what the genre should be.
You want everything to be Ragnarok.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah.
I'm not against that.
Give me Jeff Goldblum ending saying, "Well, your revolution it's a tie." You know what I mean? Like that. What a beautiful
it's
moment.
It's your birthday.
Yeah, hilarious, great. I want this more pleasure. Of that.
Well, I mean, this movie though is practically like Doctor Who villains, like just people with stretched faces and craggly nonsense.
Yes.
I would even argue though different because these are supposed to be real like people / Italians, whereas Doctor Who, those are aliens and stuff, right?
I like Italians more than you do, apparently, because this looks like there's a leak at the nearby nuclear plant. Like, everyone's like, you know how my forehead was normal sized? Well, now I'm forehead man, and I vote for the Knicks.
It's to show that the evil within has disfigured the body without.
Right.
That's why Tess is so pure and beautiful looking.
I don't know if you're fucking
person.
With me, but that's totally it, though.
Meanwhile, Dick Tracy is just a giant penis driving around in a hot rod.
Wow.
I mean, he is.
No, but if you actually read the comics back in the day, which maybe one of us has.
Maybe.
For research purposes.
Those prosthetics are very accurate to what those villains look like.
But it's great, though, because it doesn't
It just looks way creepier in person than it does in print.
Let me clarify. Let me add on to that. I don't think it looks like, those look bad because they're just trying to be accurate to the comics. Those look good because they are trying to be accurate. You know what I mean? Like
No. I mean, I will say Fitzy is on the money. It just should have been a Tim Burton movie then, who can direct silly nonsense.
It would have been a Tim Burton movie, but he was busy at the same time doing Edward Scissorhands that year, the previous year doing Batman, and during that same year doing The Nightmare Before Christmas, which he didn't direct, but
he
they
did
put
not
his
direct.
Name on it.
He gets a lot of credit for that, and he should not.
And at this point, he's pitching Nick Cage as Superman.
This looks better than a Tim Burton movie.
I disagree.
Why did you invite him? Nick, why did you invite him over here?
Cut the mic. Cut the fucking mic.
If T-Birds did this
movie. Not in this house.
It would be a better movie if T-Birds did this movie because Tim Burton, at this point, knows how to throw together a really good movie. But I think this movie, again, going back to the visuals, looks better than Tim Burton's stuff. But similar though.
Okay. What is your favorite costume / aesthetic of the film?
They're in the very beginning. I mean, I like Dick Tracy a lot.
Sure.
Right? I think that his, like, very clear, clean look works for me.
It's very man in the yellow hat.
Yeah. It's very true. But, like, something about it is, like, very, like, cheesy, like, 40s heroic.
Okay.
But also, like, you know, it's very specific, right? With that like clean yellow look. It just works for me. But also there's that scene where all the weird gangsters are kind of sitting around together, the one with the three foreheads and the small face and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff I think is really, really cool and an interesting choice to do as like big as they did.
Mm-hmm.
And to also kind of like to work as much as they did together. You know what I mean? Because I think a worse movie could pull, like, let's say Robert Rodriguez does this in like a Spy Kids movie.
Right.
Clear, that's going to be bad. Right. It's going to look like, they just made them look mutated and weird.
Sure.
It just didn't fit the comics. But something about this, like, these look like, it's like just a degree away from what a real person might look like with those particular features.
So you're saying
that really works for me.
So you show it should have been Tim Burton claymation.
No, I like that it's real people, but maybe.
What about you, Christine? Same question.
Well, with the color palette, it's hard to tell who's bad and who's good because they're all in bright colors.
Big issue
true.
In the movie.
I mean, really, he's wearing yellow.
I mean, who's lime green? How do I know if they're evil? That's
no,
what
well,
Disney
has
taught
there,
me.
Nobody.
Jokes aside, though, like this movie does a good job visually to like coordinate who the good guys and who the bad guys are. Because what we were talking about earlier, right? Like, the movie doesn't make any sense, so they have to just be like, at all times, this guy's a bad guy, this guy's a good guy. But color-wise, they don't do that.
Color-wise, not. I mean, facial prosthetics, maybe. Yeah. Yes. But who's the worst person? Spoilers alert. Was always wearing black whenever that right. person
and we never see the face.
Was on screen.
Morally, where does Dustin Hoffman lie? We don't know, and we can't.
Well, I mean...
We don't want to know. I will go to say, the dark web.
I will say, though, like, I want a creation scene like the Joker in Batman 89.
Oh, my God.
Well, but like, you have a bunch of, like, melty-faced mutants, like, you're watching the Oblongs or something from old Cartoon Network. Like, but, like, that scene where he comes out of the bath and he's dripping and there's that German sign. And he says, what I could do with cemeteries? And he's like, the mirror! Like, you understand that he's a melty-man.
But these guys aren't melty men. They're just Italians, right? Like, this is just a stylized world.
As a Belgian, I'm not comfortable with you calling a guy named Flathead an Italian.
He's just like, should he be Belgian?
No, he should be one of Professor X's rejects. Like, we need.
So he's X-Force.
Right.
Right. We just need someone going, you know, you have a very unfortunate set of skills that I need you.
But that's just what these guys look like in this world, which is what I'm saying works for me.
No, you're right. Ugly people are evil by definition.
Thank you.
No!
No, but like that, but no, that was yeah. that was like 1945. Like, I'm sorry you have gout, but that makes you the villain. Like,
gout guys are bad guys. I always say it. I always say that. Sometimes loud and unprompted.
Stop. You're there at the old country buffet, like, gout is evil, and you're just like, wow.
You're like, what?
Wow, that's
fuck
a shame.
You we so, are the no, Longhorn. No.
We have to put a brakes here because. Okay. Fitzy was at the premiere.
Oh, true.
At Walt Disney World Studios and Resort.
I was very excited because...
Was Roy there?
Glenn Headley, who played Tess Trueheart, rest in peace, Glenn Headley.
R.I.P. Rest in power.
She was married to John Malkovich at the time, and I spent my entire evening...
She's dead?
Yes.
John Malkovich is still alive?
I spent the entire evening hoping... Against hope that John Malkovich would come back to Star Tours where I was working that night. And basically we got a lot of drunk people from the press who all got Dick Tracy fedoras. And oh, if I heard, no. I got a dick hat from a dick head one more time.
Might want to rephrase that.
I could have retired on a dollar they gave me every time they said that. Yeah. And I did not meet Glenn Headley. I did not meet John Malkovich, but I did meet Richie Sambora. I don't know why he was there.
How was Richie Sambora, though? Cool.
Super nice, because I had no idea who he was.
Ah. Well, that'll do it.
I'm standing in an orange polyester jumpsuit with a name tag on. We're just chit-chatting.
Sure.
He was dating Cher at the time.
Sure. Who could have been in this movie?
I was going
to
say.
Yeah. It was a very interesting story. I mean, it was fun to be at a quote-unquote premiere, which really wasn't a premiere, because just kept the theme park open. So,
wife Candace, one day you get her drunk and sauced and sweet. She'll tell you how she met, Matt Damon and Lenny Fishburne and Lawrence Fishburne. And because when they did Contagion at CDC, she was their point person. So she met them all. They filmed with her. She met Bryan Cranston. She went to the red carpet premiere.
Oh, damn.
She was in Hollywood.
Lawrence Fishburne's first movie or acting type role was on Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yes.
Which Pee-wee, of course, and that brings us back to Danny Elfman and Tim Burton, the full circle.
So listen to the riff. And by the way, Fitzy, fucking A, that was a good story.
That is a good story.
I met Jimmy Carter one time. He wasn't charming. He was just a nice guy. He's a nice guy.
I probably shouldn't tell his story about some celebrities I met, but...
There he was urinating next to Kid
Let's
Kid
say
Rock.
He's a wrestler, and his name was... Let's make a fake name, Driss Carrico. And let's say he got really drunk and tried to fight me for taking a picture of him and the guy I was producing for at the time. Learned later because he was with a woman who was not his wife.
Uh-oh. Oopsie doodles.
Yeah, that guy, that guy's a mess.
I one time met this, like really cute twosome.
Please, me and Christine are sitting right here.
Candace and Fitzy. They were pretty funny and pretty like pretty charming. And then like Evan and I tried to go up to like meet them, and they said I wasn't funny. And then they walked on. And then they said Larry was funny only because he had power.
He did have power.
And then they cut his brakes and replaced him. So you know, like, it wouldn't be the first time that Candace demanded the guy stop and he didn't, so she killed him.
Do these jokes even work without no? It doesn't matter. Larry is great.
Larry's almost funny. Almost. And he rules us all. And he makes a wicked cheesesteak and fries with cancer on top.
I was just... Okay, so this is kind of a deep cut.
Are you going to crack out your resume?
Sorry, myopia fans who have never had Lull Bites, or will never have Lull Bites, Larry, who is the guy who is kind of our ringleader.
And because you all live in Australia.
Kind of, right. Kind of our ringleader for Cineprov. He runs a food truck called Lull Bites, and the man's from Philly, and he makes incredible food.
Sometimes.
No, I've never had a bad meal on that truck. The only thing that kind of was not great and was my fault is we deep fried a meatball. Because you think it might be good because, like...
Right?
Here's what I'll say.
Okay, we'll play this game.
When you try to cook something,
yeah,
you hope that it tastes greater than the sum of its parts. And the deep fried meatball tasted... like the sum of its parts. And therefore, not great. And not awful, because a meatball is good, and the deep fry batter... Anyway, I occasionally work on the truck. And
all right.
Back to Dick Tracy.
Back to Dick Tracy. So I have a thing. So obviously, we were talking about God bless Glenn Headley playing Tess Trueheart. When I look up the cast, though... of this, are you aware that Sean Young is also credited as being Tess Trueheart?
Whom is Sean Young?
Oh, Sean Young is from Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner. She's the one who's a replicant.
She was in Stripes.
She was in a lot of movies, and then she like lost her mind and
she was
like,
in
she the, broke the, into a
she
bunch of those,
chased
like,
after Tim Burton in a Catwoman outfit to get cast as Catwoman.
Early 90s, yeah. Like, yes. Girl in the movie where she,
So my question is, and so myopia fans and viewers and those of you friends of the deep web, why is Sean Young also listed on here? I wonder if she was originally Tess and maybe she did a few of the scenes and then maybe she did something crazy and got canned and they ended up putting Glenn in because Sean is known for being kind of a loose cannon. And I would like to know more. So if you know, write us in. Let me know. I want to know more.
Mm-hmm.
Edumacate me.
I think the casting of Glenn was perfect.
Oh yeah, she's great for it. What's her name? Sean Young is not a good casting for that. So that's why I just want to know why is she on here? Like, is there some like deep shit that went down?
I think the
that
casting
causes...
of this movie is like unbelievable.
Oh yeah, I mean this is a super all star casting. I mean there were people in here I didn't even realize were in this movie. Are you aware that Catherine O'Hara was in this movie?
No.
She was...
Of Schitt's Creek fame?
Yes, Texie Garcia.
What?
And I'm going to shut you right now for just a second, because the kid's original casting was Macaulay Culkin.
Way better. Would have been way
better.
But
how long was that same year, right?
No, shut your whore mouth.
Fucking hate this kid.
He turned it down to do Home Alone, though.
Good for him.
Good choice.
For him.
Wow.
This kid.
Second question, the original director... because it was written and produced by Warren Beatty. He asked, I think it was one of you two who pointed this out, Bob Fosse to direct the thing.
Oh, that's appropriate.
And you know what? He turned it down. And you know who was the second person they asked? Scorsese.
What?
Marty Scorsese. But this was the same year as Goodfellas.
Better than
I thought you were going to say Dementia 13.
I said in the riff.
It's Frankie Ford Coppola.
Oh, shit. Same thing. Whatever.
This movie is more accurate to the Italian experience than Goodfellas.
But to quote you here, Sean Young was originally supposed to be there, but she was fired by Warren Beatty a few days before filming because Warren Beatty apparently wouldn't sleep with him, is the rumor.
What?
At least that's what she claims. Although,
well, Madonna sure was fucking him, so she got in the movie.
The real mom of the kid, disputed this because she came in so demanding and apparently slapped the kid on the first day of set, so Beatty fired him anyway. I made a mistake.
I believe that.
And Beatty made a statement saying, I made a mistake casting her. She came to set and ruined everything. I felt bad about it. I will say, based on the chemistry, it feels right. But this movie is just... There's a reason why it's not Batman, and it's that it seems like watching this, everything went wrong.
Yeah.
There was a vision.
It's like you watched... It's like someone watched Batman, but kind of like didn't get that you need to make at least a B minus story to it. You know what I mean?
Hey, Tim, what if there was other colors than blue and black?
Sure. I don't know anything about those. But I don't know, man. All right, dude, if you want to try them.
I mean, Jack Nicholson got a really cool Cure album for him after that. But, like if I had to pick between the cast, I would pick...
Clearly.
Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Come on.
But this movie kept all the fake newspaper printers in business.
All the spitting newspapers you could possibly want.
So many.
And it definitely, it made, like, red end tables very hot this season.
Yes.
But hang on. IKEA. But going back to the spinning newspapers... And the like red end tables and kind of the weird color design. There's like a string of movies that exist that are kind of in this same vein, and you see those constantly aging better than movies that came out around the same time. Let's compare Speed Racer, which I'm a little biased because I love
15 years later.
Right. Compare that to Transformers 2, which came out I think around the same time. 20 years later. Right. I actually think Speed Racer came out
When you do a weird color palette like that, you no longer date the film.
Right, exactly.
And that's what it does.
This movie, has aged very well.
It's supposed to be somewhere in the 20s, 30s, 40s.
There's a vision.
But you wouldn't know what year it was actually filmed.
And it doesn't matter, because that's when Dick Tracy takes place.
That's the trick, you know, is when you have something that's this strange looking, much like Edward Scissorhands, It's color palette. It's the same thing. You can't tell when
this
that
is
movie
a better
was
movie
made.
Than Edward Scissorhands.
What?
I firmly
no.
Yeah. Visually, I think this accomplishes more. I think there's so like, especially the stuff in the beginning when he's in the theater and he goes like, "I'll be right back," and then they have a scene and then he comes back to the theater. That's so good.
Bit my knuckles so hard it hurt.
I think Burton's best is better than these movies. I think Ed Wood, Big Fish. I think those are. Better than this, but I think this is better
Batman
than Edward Scissorhands.
89, though, that was the year before. That's a mess.
I also don't really care about it. Edward Scissorhands.
The mirror.
Yeah, who cares? Yo. Doesn't do anything for me.
They have a purple man in here because Prince was in the other movie.
True.
So, do you want to hear some other 1990s films that came out this year for comparison's sake?
Schindler's List.
I would love to. No.
All right, so The Handmaid's Tale.
What?
Which I didn't realize that was
the original.
Yeah, yes. The original. Dances with Wolves.
That's better than this.
Home Alone.
Better than this.
Edward Scissorhands.
Not better than this.
Total Recall.
On the same level, probably better.
Cry Baby.
Okay. I've
better.
Not seen it.
Awakenings.
Not seen it.
What? Wait a minute. Isn't Awakenings the one with...
It's De Niro and Robin Williams.
Yeah,
Robin
Williams.
Yes.
Oh, God. That's such a sad movie. Hunt for Red October.
Better. This is better than
Goodfellas.
Fellas.
Better, not hellos.
Better than this, but not as authentic.
The Godfather Part 3.
This is better than that.
Misery.
Kathy Bates, better than this movie.
P.S. Kathy Bates was apparently also in this film, Dick Tracy.
No, shut up.
Yes, she was.
No,
you
after
can't
all
make
that.
This shit up. Yes.
Everybody go listen to our riff along to see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Kathy Bates is in this movie.
Yes, she is.
No
and,
shit.
Yeah, and Pretty Woman was also this year, and that's all y'all need to know. And of course, Tremors, the best movie of all time.
I haven't seen Tremors. I would bet. Tremors is probably just above this movie.
Wait, did you say you haven't seen Tremors?
I have not seen Tremors.
Tremors is so good.
We can do a Tremors episode.
We already did.
Nick, Evan has not seen
I would
Tremors.
Do another. Can we do a revisit?
Yeah.
We'll call it
Tremors
Black
2.
Clockwork Orange. We just strap people's eyes open.
Yeah, we're the ludicolo
machine. We want them to watch.
We call it Tremors 1, 2.
That's right.
Not Tremors 2. Very different than Tremors 2. I don't want to watch Tremors 2.
You don't have to.
But... This
the
is
the first one I saw was Tremors 3. But the original
it's not the
one
where
better.
they fart and they fly or something.
That's right.
Because a lot of the movies from this particular time period have not aged well in a lot of ways. Edward Scissorhands, I'm including. That's a personal opinion. I don't know what the popular opinion on Edward Scissorhands is, to be honest with you.
It's been a while.
Has it aged well? I haven't seen it in a while.
I haven't seen it in a while, and I can tell you right now, if we watched it, it'd be amazing.
Really?
That and Ed Wood, which is the same era.
Ed Wood
that
is,
and Batman Ed, 89. Well, hey,
whoa. I'm not saying every Burton movie. Ed Wood is head and shoulders better than this.
Yeah,
movie.
But they're all the same era. Head and we're shoulders. Talking What's late eras and early 90s.
But is Johnny Depp's recent problematic status going to affect future viewings of
everything
his movies?
But Ed Wood? I think Ed Wood is good enough that it stands on its own, but I see your point. It's like Cara Dune in Mandalorian. You're like, my biggest problem with the finale of the latest Mandalorian season is that Cara Dune didn't like have a violent diarrhea death. You know what I mean?
That's the only thing. Is this a spoiler?
Only thing it was missing. Yeah, sorry, spoilers.
I don't watch the show.
So food poisoning and die because of it, because that would make a great season.
I mean, it would make a different season, that's for sure.
Much better.
My name is Grogu. Oh, no.
Oh, man. Cara Dune died because she had diarrhea and died.
She went back to her home planet.
Why? You shouldn't be happy.
She can't go back to her home planet.
Good.
Alderaan.
Alderaan.
Doesn't matter.
I knew people on that planet.
Who did you know who died?
Yeah, he's like, you lose anyone? And I'm just like, yeah, that's where she's from, dude. Like, that's where she went to high school.
I babysat that dog one summer when I was getting up money so I could buy a bike.
Not about Dick Tracy. Doesn't matter.
Better than Dick Tracy.
Back to Dick Tracy.
Well. All
right. So ask a really insightful question, Nick.
Oh, God, help me.
You want me to do it?
Go ahead.
I already asked the last one while you were off.
Okay. So movie-wise.
You're not going to let her ask
a
question?
I guess my thing is, comic book movie wise, where do you throw this movie? Because, like, do other movies stand on the shoulders of this movie? Because I think it does an incredible job.
Back your salty ass up. 89 was Batman 1989. Batman, the animated show, came out this year. This feels more like Batman, the animated series.
I wish that more.
Which
more,
also Danny Elfman did the music for.
Danny Elfman was a slut for Punishment.
I'm pretty sure I said this off mic. I wish more Marvel movies took cues from movies like this, because my biggest problem with the MCU, which obviously
metric system, a
triumph, the metric system, obviously the MCU is a triumph and like unbelievable, right? If you told somebody 30 years ago, hey, we're gonna make 70 movies that everyone's gonna see and like kind of buy into the narrative of, you'd sound insane. But my biggest problem with those movies is that they visually are not very interesting or comic booky. They're all very, like, they're closer to, like, you know, Mission Impossible than they are Dick Tracy. And I really wish they were closer to Dick Tracy. You know
this
what I mean?
This movie, Dick Tracy?
This particular movie, visually speaking, I mean.
This feels like a Injustice video game.
I see what you're saying, but to nitpick and split hairs, I think the Injustice video game could have dealt with some, could have used more influence from movies like this, because the game is boring as hell. Looking visually, the game is great. It's a fun game. I like that game.
Okay, so my question is, where the fuck are we with the plot? But second,
I can't tell you, because this movie is insane. So much of it is guys talking that in just like roundabout cyclical ways. And like, you know, if I have to give a critique of this movie, and I will, it's is that pointless. A lot of this movie is just running, is just like hamster wheels, right? Like nothing in this movie progresses. You could cut out the middle 45 minutes of this movie, they wouldn't change a lick, you know?
Well, okay. So essentially the thing is, I keep wanting to think it's Sean Bean, but it's not. It's Scarface. We have a Scarface movie here by Al Pacino.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's taking over the other crime syndicates because it's Scarface and it's not Scarface. And it's like, and again, this is a Batman plot. The problem is Dick Tracy is a weekly comic in the newspapers, which is like between four panels. And then on Sunday, it's like a 10-panel comic.
And colored, I might.
And Batman literally came out the year before, and it was the biggest movie of all time at the time, right? And so that's what it's trying to do. We're trying to make a Batman movie, and so they follow the Batman arc exactly, in which there's a hero who's a small-time hero dealing with small-time villains, and then all of a sudden, Sean Bean, who's actually Al Pacino, kills everyone else which also happens when the Joker kills everyone else.
It's true.
And then, you know, he seduces a beautiful woman, which is Vicky Vale or Madonna. It's the same plot.
Oh.
Exactly.
Film-wise, absolutely, this is a, like, very cheap ripoff. But I think it does some things. I mean, I don't need to
reiterate. I mean, again, if it was the Italian Spider-Man or whatever, it would... Turkish Spider-Man is the movie.
Oh, my God. Turkish Spider-Man's great, but...
But that's what it was. If it was,
or
like...
Japanese Spider-Man? Oh, man.
But the, like, that's it. The name of the game, right? Yeah. Like, if you're just like, what if it was another language and it was just the pastel version of Batman? It's a cool movie.
Well, I think this movie is I would describe it as a cult classic. But when you look at cult classics, I think the reason they become cult classics is you have to look at, like, the pop culture kind of surrounding them, right? Like, so a movie I really love, I said earlier, Speed Racer is a movie I like a lot. But really? That movie becomes, right? I know. I talked about it on the show already. I know. I'm not saying...
Check 100 episodes
ago. Right, exactly. But what I'm saying is, like, the cultural context of this movie is kind of similar to that one, where it's like, oh, this is kind of like not only capitalizing on what was popular at the time, in this case Batman, in that case like Transformers, but also how does it twist and subvert those things? This one does it by leaning further into those comic book aesthetics. That one does it by, like, I mean, making it a real movie, right? Like,
I think you like this movie much more than you expected to.
I'm very, very lukewarm on this movie, I think.
Okay, Fitzy, come on, help me get out of this man funk.
Yeah, I've definitely dug us a hole.
Well, as someone who might be closer to Warren Beatty's demographic, I totally get, like, you can see where it's someone who is a fan of the comics. That was his. It's a Warren Beatty movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he grew up on. I can see where he was taking some cues from other things. He wanted to cast his girlfriend, who happened to be at the time Madonna. And he was much better in this movie than he was in her Truth or Dare documentary, where he pretended to be interested in her musical career.
So true.
And not her titties.
Well,
I mean, I will say, too, like, this does... I mean, and Batman starts the era of the superhero comic movie, but this starts a noir version, right? Like,
I thought it was more a comic strip as opposed to comic book. Like, a comic strip is a different aesthetic. Like, visually, it's neat. It's neat to watch. It gets boring plot-wise.
Yeah. Well, and like, for me, it feels like a neo-noir. I mean, it's a long way off, but, like, 97's L.A. Confidential feels a lot like this, right? Like, where it's very, like, fedoras dipped down. There's a lot of, like, cafe scenes.
Well,
like,
ironic connection between those two. They originally had wanted Breathless Mahoney be played by Kim Basinger.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
And also, in both movies, they just kicked the shit out of Danny DeVito. But in one, they just edited it out. Dude, that scene where Russell Crowe kicks the shit out of
poor Tucker. Oh, my God.
Ow! I love Russell Crowe. For those of you
sorry,
don't know.
You leaned back and said something funny.
Well, you know, I told you I'm trying to space out what I say, so I lean back from the microphone so I won't talk constantly.
She wants to do the silent Bob thing, where she says something profound once every hour, and then we edit her out anyway.
The problem is she wants to do it every 15 minutes.
Exactly. That's
minutes.
Why. That's why I have to sit back to be good.
Yeah. Yep.
Comedy back tremens to be good.
Here. If we edit it, perfect. But every 4 minutes.
Y'all. You know what? I'm not going to tell you the cool fact
I
know
now.
Don't get it.
No, I want to know.
It's okay. Matt Cohen would have interrupted you, too, and told him about your soft, like, his, like, sci-fi fantasy.
Damn. Anyway, I wrote a book.
Damn. You overcooked it. Damn.
So,
that means
soggy bottoms.
Nobody likes the soggy bottom.
Soggy bottom, boys. Aside. I am curious where you guys... fall. Well, because we haven't talked about... Do you guys like this movie?
I'll tell you what. If this was on at, like, a bar or mediocre party, the volume was down. No. I don't... Okay.
No, just mediocre party is a really good way of putting it.
So, one of my favorite bars in Atlanta is a place called the Bookhouse Pub.
Sure.
And what they do is they always have, like, high-minded movies on usually at low volume.
Victory Sandwich Bar, same way.
I saw Grizzly Man there.
And Yeah.
But like this movie, I got my wife, I think it's Criterion, if not, but it's the DVD version of Yellow Submarine, where you can opt into the full movie or just the music version.
Way better.
If you just played the Danny Elfman music and had these visuals, it is the movie is not best picture. The cinematographer,
insane. Dude,
gorgeous. Costume design, set design.
Everything about this.
The miniature work. I will take this movie over, say, the second Thor movie. Or
Scissorhands?
Why? Because, no. But
this looks like Nighthawks come to life, dude. It works. It's great.
My point with Scissorhands is different, but this has functionality. They're miniatures. There's matte paintings.
Yeah.
I don't like modern movies unless you have a master at work, only because it's all CGI. This movie is practical.
Yeah.
When there's a little car driving down a Technicolor street.
It aged so well because of that.
Like, you could almost do halfway between a Robot Chicken sketch and Don Hertzfeldt. It's all modern. I mean, that's why I like Batman 89, but he jumps off the building and it turns into a cartoon. You're just like, well, yeah, there's no CGI. Let's make it, let's animate that fucker.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, we're on the same page here, my man.
And by the way, Madonna, you don't need to animate any of that shit. She is gorgeous.
She's smoldering.
I remember really, really, really liking this movie. I thought I was going to be liking it just as much today. It wasn't as good.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, I think now as an adult, I can appreciate the cinematography and the costume. And I'm like, oh, well, all these things are cool. And I agree with the whole, just playing Danny Elfman or just watching it silently. I think I'd be like, oh, that's really badass looking. But I remember the story being really great and the music being really awesome. The songs, but they're kind of and the story's like, eh.
Plot-wise, it's very muddy. Yeah. I have no... I think it's like...
I don't know. Maybe as a kid it makes more sense. I think it's a little more cut and dry, so it's easy to understand.
Well, when Nick was describing it, he was like... The way he described it, I was like, oh, I was looking too hard into this movie. This movie does not have anything going on. And again, comic book Sunday strip-wise, adaptation-wise... Yeah, you don't need anything more than Dick Tracy's the good guy. These guys are the bad guys, and he's gonna crack the case and figure him out. But I was like, maybe there should be a dash more, even a twist where it's like, which there's a small one, but...
But you knew the twist was coming the whole time. Not the person you thought it was going to be, but yeah, the fact that you knew there was a masked villain that was behind everything, and we were all going to find out. You never known there was this other villain?
You knew there was a twist. Coming.
Yeah, you were like, oh, eventually they'll reveal who it is.
I didn't know that particular character was going to be the twist, but it was like, it didn't matter because I was like, oh, that's the detective twist.
Well, and Dick Van Dyke eventually wearing the, Dick Tracy robe.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, fine. And to me, this feels like, again, I hate to harp on it because it, she's not even listening. But
I am listening.
It's the better show, but the Batman animated series.
Yeah.
And only because if there was a Dick Tracy animated series based on this, it would make more sense. But in the meantime, it feels like they compressed 6 seasons into one.
Well, right? I would say that's a big problem with movies like this and a lot of comic book movies. Up until probably Spider-Man 3. I think Iron Man 1 is probably the first one to figure it out that you watch, say, Spider-Man 3, a big weakness of that movie is, they try to compress Spider-Man's, week-to-week dealings into a 2-hour story. But superhero movies, and I would argue that Dick Tracy's kind of a superhero of some kinds.
Yeah,
those need to be short stories dealing with, one arc, one thing. But then that's hard to say.
The Clone Wars dilemma?
It's the Clone Wars dilemma.
And then you're trying to, but then you go back, you make 6 right. seasons of a cartoon, you're like, wow, this explains everything. And I think maybe they really thought they could do that with Dick Tracy,
too. Yeah, and there's some superheroes and some fictional characters that, work better. For instance, I think, that's part of the reason we've seen Batman have so much success is he works better, right? Iron Man works better as this, but Spider-Man, for instance, is much better in, a TV series where you could see the week after week, you see Kraven the Hunter kind of stalking him or him dealing with the week to week of him being at school. Dick Tracy's the same way, I think, where he's like, I've got a couple of cases going on. I got these dames coming after me. I'm just kind of existing in this world. If we had this as a mini series.
Well, I mean, I will say, I think you're right, but I think the problem is almost the opposite, which is that
really
Dick Tracy has always been the film noir, like Raymond Chandler type, where he's like, he's cigarette smoking guy. And then the year before, Batman was not only the biggest movie, it was the biggest movie of all time. And they're like, but he's also a comic guy.
Yeah.
And what if we made him more like that? Because it does seem like they, like, if you told me, like, in 87, both Tim, like, both DC, because Tim Burton came later, but both DC and Warren Beatty were trying to pitch the same movie, right?
Good point. All right, yeah, I and see then, where you're going with this.
And then at one point, Warren Beatty hit a speed bump, so he was the year later, and he's and then the suits were like, but what if he was also Batman? Mm-hmm. Right? Because that's what that feels like, because right. There's a fully developed movie, and then he also sometimes is Robin. Like, because the kid is clearly Robin.
Well, it's true. You know, it's just one of those things where it's fascinating, like, what movies get made after a, like, a movie that is biggest of all time gets made. Because everybody tries to do their version.
So, right? I'll say this. Warren actually wanted to make this as early as the early 70s, attempted to purchase the rights for it, and finally got them in 1985.
Okay.
And in 85, he wanted to make the film. And he pitched it to Spielberg, who turned it down. Classic and then he Spielbies. And then he pitched it to Scorsese.
Well, he had just done Star Wars.
Who then turned it down. Bullshit. And so that's when Warren decided he had to direct it himself. And that's why it didn't come out until 90.
Interesting. What was the first year?
70? So he wanted to purchase it in the mid-70s. And it took him almost 10 years to finally get the rights to it in 1985.
You know what happened in 76?
War?
Superman.
Oh.
And so it's linked to the Batman-Superman dialectic.
No, this probably comes more from Superman than Batman.
I know, and I mean, first of all, Candace, thank you for dropping knowledge bombs on us.
You're welcome. Yeah. See?
We love it.
See, that's what happens when I sit up next to the microphone.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, any thoughts? Because, like, the end of this movie is murky. The kid is involved. Madonna is, seducing Satan. And
the longer this movie goes on, the worse it gets. That's my thought on this movie. The charm wears off very fast.
I mean, they had set up, they had 9,000 villains in this movie.
Yeah.
If they really wanted to do another one, they could have, because God knows they had enough villains.
First of all, we need to retire the Joker for 15, 20 years. But
hard agree.
But
Jesus Christ, I'm sick of the Joker.
But, I mean, again, in 89, the year before this, when you have one villain, who are you going to pick?
All jokesy.
Right? And so that's why Fitzy is right. Like, and I agree with you. There's too many Marvel movies. But, like, that's what Marvel does. One villain at a time. Mm-hmm. As opposed to DC, where there's like, you know what we need in Justice League or Suicide Squad? 7,000 characters!
Purple guys, MacGuffins, etc. Good point.
I prefer the McMuffin. but regardless, but the that's the problem here,
yeah.
Right? Like, you have the Joker, and you have all of his henchmen. But no one here is a henchman. Everyone has their own time.
No, you're totally right. Is that, like, none of the... Because you can do the multiple villains thing, right? Like, some of the Marvel movies have proven that they're... Like, fucking Guardians 2 is a really good example of how you can do a couple of different villains or Ragnarok. But you gotta let a couple of those villains... You gotta throw some in the background, right? Like, in Guardians 2, there's those gold guys. Background villains, they still push the plot forward, but they're background. You gotta pick one antagonist to be the forefront, right? Same as you have to pick one protagonist. You can do an ensemble comedy, right? Guardians, again, great example. It's about the group, but Star-Lord is clearly your protagonist, you know? Yeah. All Chris P. Ratt is your main character.
Well, and again, since Batman was, you know, in the modern era in 89... We've had 4, 7, like 10 times since he's been out, since, like, you know, Evan's even been conceived.
That's true.
And in that system, it's almost always one villain, and sometimes another villain sticks his cock in the way.
Right. But again, it's just the tip of that villain, right? You don't get the whole... It's not... We're giving just equal spotlight to those villains, which is a big problem with this particular movie.
Everyone that he knows shows up.
Right, exactly. And it's like, I get that if the concept of the cinematic universe was out, maybe a different story. But, like, there are, like, 4 antagonists of equal importance in this movie. And it's just bloated. It's just bloated and hard to follow because of that. If there was one guy pulling all the strings, cool. But there's really not. Or at least they don't do a good job. There is, kind of, but they don't do a good job of showing that he's the head.
Scarface for kids.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, we talked about the prosthetics and the look about it.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons why they did these over-imaginative faces and heads and prosthetics is to show that they were all different characters.
Right,
because
you
don't even know their damn names. You're just like, oh, it's the big head guy. Oh, it's the flathead guy.
It's fuckhead Mick.
The creepy melty face guy. Like, because again, there's too many people to keep track of, name wise, character wise. Who are they? Who played them?
Right.
I don't even know. At one point, I was just like, who the fuck are these people? Is this still, have we met you yet? Maybe.
But
I don't know.
But visually is a good way to distinguish those people, right? Like, again, going back to the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 example, the secondary villains all plated in gold, so it doesn't matter if you remember like who those people are. If you see people plated in gold, you know those are kind of your secondary villains.
Right.
This movie does enough to visually separate those guys, but not at all to narratively separate those people.
Well, I mean, it screams the difference between Avengers versus Justice League.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because, well, and again, I agree with Candace. I'm more of a Marvel person now than a DC person, except for Batman.
I'm a Batman guy.
But, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe started with a Jon Favreau hope, and then it slowly built. And the second one wasn't great. The third one was interesting. Same. But every movie, it built and built and built. And that's what Batman 89 does.
Yeah.
There's one man and there's one villain. And then the second time, there's two villains. And guess what? The real villain is Christopher Walken, who's not even a real Batman villain.
It works for me.
Dude, it's a masterpiece of a movie. But the thing of it is...
that far, but...
oh, I disagree. That's another movie for another day.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, you have only two. At this point, if you were a Dick Tracy fan, you introduce everyone, and you're just like, maybe stick to it. Which feels like those Justice League movies where you're just like, you know, you haven't seen Cyborg, Aquaman, or Flash yet, but they'll be important.
Here they are, baby! Yeah, no, this movie is totally like... And it's easy to say this now in a post-Justice League world where you're like, this is a movie bloated with trying to set up a bunch of characters. Because Justice League is this movie where it's like, here's the cinematic universe! Here's everybody! Here they are! They're all at the same time! Oh, good, now we have a movie. 40 minutes later, now that we've introduced everybody.
Well, or it could be the opposite in that, you know, nowadays everything is expected to have 5, 6, 7 expansions or versions of it. Maybe Warren Beatty went into this knowing... this is probably the one time I'm going to be able to make this particular film because I had such a hard time getting the rights and shopping it out to everybody and nobody wanted to do it and I'm having to do it by myself, so I might as well just include every fucking thing I like in it.
That still doesn't make a cohesive story.
Well,
but I'm wondering if that's really the thought process behind it.
Sure, it's very possible.
It's like, I'm just going to put it all in there because it's probably going to be the one time I'm going to be able to do this.
Well, and I will defend a movie which people are, I mean... First of all, I don't like social media except for pornography, but...
Yeah, Pornhub rules, obviously.
So much porn.
You make that account, you get stuff tailored to you.
Well, I was going to say the first Wonder Woman movie, which is solid. I think it's a good movie. It suffers from being...
Well, the first 2/3 of it are good.
Well, I was going to say the same thing, which is that it suffers from being, after 15 years of Marvel movies, and she's trying to carve her own way...
Right. It suffers from being bloated and needed to pair into a bigger universe. So you get this villain who's like, I'm so much bigger than the rest of the world you've established. And it's like, dude, if you like just kept up with the first 2/3 of this movie, if you were on the same level, if you let this movie breathe and happen, this is one of the best superhero movies ever. Like, well, the first two-thirds are incredible.
Well, and I just rewatched China Syndrome, but it's just a bunch of white guys up above looking down saying, you could do more with this. And again, I don't hate that movie. I like the movie. I think
it's the same. It's perfectly fine. But could have been better.
But, like, that's the difference between it and, like, Jon Favreau doing Iron Man, where there was just a movie that no one gave a shit about, and he made a decent movie. If there was no effort on DC, and she made that movie, it would have been a fine movie, right? Like, and to me, again, tying it back to Dick Tracy, if there was no Batman, this would have been a fine movie. But Tim Burton had an aesthetic. He knew what he was doing. And also, the villain mattered. In this movie, it was all about the hero. Michael Keaton is not anyone who would have expected to be Batman. He wasn't.
True.
And yet, he's a maniac. But then Jack Nicholson shows up and goes, you know what? Where does he get these wonderful toys? And you have a movie because you have a maniac playing the villain. At this point, you just have people with prosthetics. There's no maniac.
Yeah, there's not.
There's just a makeup job. And you know what I saw with a makeup job? Cats.
This is better than Cats. Oh, you're being unfair.
No. But it was if there was a stone-faced man trying to kill the cats, and then everyone else was a cat, right? This Jellicle power is going to stop L.A.
I don't know. I think Al Pacino, I think, does a good job of being a villain in this and being a maniac.
Great.
I mean, he's a maniac. At one point, he is on stage dancing with Madonna and her backup dancers, showing them how to dance. And that,
throw out your hands.
He's
stick out your tush.
He's just crazy. And you're like, oh my God. And he's like, we're going to make this the best fucking club ever. And he's just screaming and acting. And I was like, wow, he's bad shit bonkers.
Is he a villain or does he want to put on a really good show?
I mean, have you ever met a director? The answer is both. So.
Bob Fosse is out there looking at him.
Trust me. Yeah, but I think it was just too many of them. There was too many villains. Had it just been him and maybe a couple others, it'd have been perfect.
Well, they wasted Jimmy Caan. I mean, he was in one scene and they blew him up. And he was in The Godfather.
Oh, is that who? Is that?
Well, I mean,
that
it's
was
the
James Caan?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's almost the same scene as when he went to the drive-thru with the canola.
I know, but at least he had more. You got to know more about him than in just one scene where he like had four lines.
Series, we just saw him in Elf, and he was pretty good there.
True.
Well, Farrell didn't blow up his car.
You guys ready to wrap this down?
Yeah, let's do it. We're broken spirits now.
Brandicio. No, Brando Show.
That's about it.
The Brando Show. See, that's what your morning show theme would sound like
someday.
Brenda show.
Yeah.
He's doing Amanda show. Yeah. Final thoughts on this movie. I think plot wise, it's a mess. A little lukewarm. Just so blech plot wise. But visually, this movie is striking and has aged insane. Like, it is still better than most comic book movies look wise. Like, there's two movies I could compare it to, and it's Speed Racer and Spider-Verse, and those movies are like, you know, the upper echelon of good looking comic book movies. So ultimately, I'm going to give this movie a positive review because that factor does mean a lot. And I think the performances are good, even though it's a little muddy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would say this is a positive flick. I liked it. I would recommend watching this movie once, ideally at a bar without sound.
Sure. The lovely Fitzy.
Visually, it's a lovely confection. It's a delightful treat. I would highly recommend, even if you're not a Madonna fan, and you might be a theater geek like me, Stephen Sondheim wrote the music.
Oh my God, how did we not talk about that?
And the soundtrack album that Madonna is featured on has some amazing songs, and you really, it's an overlooked gem. Even if you don't like Madonna, there's some amazing show tunes there. It could have been a musical on its own. So on that, get the CD. You can even, Vogue is on there too. So if you even like Vogue is on that album. So,
like Vogue.
But I would still give it a thumbs up. Watch it once. I mean, you can see the sizzling chemistry between Warren Beatty and Madonna, which gets expounded if you actually watch Truth or Dare to see the actual chemistry between the two of them, which pretty much is parallel. But watch it. What else are you going to do? It's COVID.
Yeah, right.
It's true.
Candace?
Yeah, so I mean, I had a good enough time. For those of you who didn't know who Stephen Sondheim is, did the music for Into the Woods, and also Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
Which, ironically, was also done by Danny Elfman and Tim Burton.
Stay tuned. That's a stay tuned and a half.
I know, it's a creepy circle
next
of life.
Next October?
Right?
Oh, I'll totally.
I would totally do that. And so, but no.
Like Sacha Baron Cohen.
Visually, it's great. Costumes, great. I'm always one for practicals. That's why James Favreau's stuff for Elf and things like that have aged so well, because it's forced perspective and it's right. all practicals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, like, that stuff just, it's a winner. That way you can't tell, like, what year the bad CGI was from. And I'm a little sad that it's not as amazing and complex as I remember it to be. But, you know, I'm more complex now as an adult than I was when I was, like, 12 when I saw this for the first time. So that's okay. But I'll definitely give it a good one thumbs up.
I am torn about this movie only because I agree with everything the three of you said.
I think we all kind of said the same thing. So right. not a hard.
But for me, since I love them Batman movies so much, it feels similar. But this is like the Technicolor Dreamcoat version, right? Like, because they make actual miniatures. They make actual cityscapes.
It's the fanfic. Someone went home and made the fanfic.
Well, that's what I was saying when I said they go farther into the aesthetic. I think that totally rules.
Because, like, again, like, I've rewatched both of the Batman and Batman Returns recently, and there's these elegant, like, and sometimes they're hyper-masculine, they're hyper-feminine, like, they're stalled, like...
Oh, that's not even the gender portrayal of it
all. No. But, like, there's statues of men reaching down and statues of women and, like, these beautiful buildings. But in Burton, they're all grayscale. And here, it's, like, Looney Tunes Technicolor Dreamcoat, like Dolly Parton, like... Mm-hmm. Like, and like... You Dolly. Watch the two, like, if I had a bar that had cool or decency, you'd have on one screen 89 Batman, on the other screen this, right? Like, mm-hmm. And so, like, for me, what is my criticism? Warren Beatty should have had a real director direct this.
Which he wanted to. That's he not did. His fault.
And it's not. So, like, to me, this becomes then a passion project.
It is a passion project.
And because it's a passion project, the passion parts work. Like, because, and it has the same tragic problem as, like, Casper 96, where you're just like,
I love that movie.
Did you grow up with Casper?
You would love that
movie. You
should
show up with Casper. Because, like, Dan Aykroyd, dressed as Dr., like, Ray Stantz,
yeah.
goes like, who should you call? Someone else. And you're like, that's, okay.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But at the same time, that's the way this works here, where you're like, you know who doesn't care about this? Robert De Niro, but at the same time he's like, wait, you're doing Dick Tracy? Right? Like, that's what it is. You're doing Dick Tracy. Except for Madonna, who's just like, I just came fresh off some good sex. What are you going to do? I'll be in your movie and show more cleavage than you expect from the 1940s.
With a PG rating.
Right. Unless you watch it in HD where you can see them nips, girl.
So, at
the end of the day, would I recommend this? This is a movie, if you haven't seen, you have to see once.
Yes.
This is a see at least once.
I think so. I totally agree, especially if you're a big, like, comic book movie fan.
Yeah.
And by the way, at one point, you got to watch it in, like, surround, because, like, you're watching around. Like, they do a good job with the sound mix. It's on HBO Plus where we watch, or HBO Max where we watched it.
Finally on Roku, by the way.
Finally.
And apparently, it's also on Hulu's premium subscription.
Right.
I just looked that up, so.
And I will say, it looks great. And again, I prefer this. I've seen 300. We did it a while ago. I've seen Sin City. Great. Do it a while. Sin City and 300 sequel, you should never watch. But the color scheming there wants to be this one. Because this color scheme is gorgeous.
Mm.
It is. It looks like something. Is it what it should be? It should be for this world. This, like, what creates a universe, right? That's what, I mean, and I don't like the Tim
electrons and protons and neutrons.
That too.
Everybody lives in a street, in a city, or a village, or a town, for what it's worth.
Oh my God.
It's a great big universe.
Yeah, except we're all really
all kidding. Right, let's slam we're this episode.
The size of Mickey Rooney.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, I'll reintroduce everyone on the panel, but if you enjoyed this, we did an entire commentary on this movie.
Which was really fun.
And it was either on Patreon for Myopia or the Cineprov Riff track. And if you have not been listening to us on Cineprov Riff, when we do one you have to pay for, I write an entire trivia. And we play some games, we have some fun, we drink some booze, and Candace tells me to stop talking to her. It's fun for everyone involved. And if you are listening to this on the main feed, thank you. Because last year, we got an additional 35,000 downloads.
Ooh.
And in the meantime, we have subscribers on Patreon. We have riffs on Patreon. And I'm surrounded by some of the best people I know. Oh, so, Evan, agreed. Will you sign off?
Do you not know a lot of people? Yeah. Evan Brando, right here. You can find me on Twitch at The Brando Show and on all the other socials at Evan Brando Show.
And when I'm too drunk to help, he runs the games for us on Cineprov.
That is true.
And the lovely Miss Fitzy.
I'm Christine. At Sugar Smack, SugarSmak on Twitter. Copywriter by day, celebrity journalist by night.
Mm-hmm. And Candace?
I'm Candace. I don't have a cool Twitch account or a Twitter account
you
or
gotta get
any of those things. Feel free to... I don't know. Talk to me on Facebook. Visit me at the Plaza when it reopens at
find
the Fabulous
Rocket. I mean,
yeah, definitely.
Show us our boobers.
That's right.
Well,
and Christian, what is it? Only Farmers. and yeah, so just you know, feel free to send me a DM or whatever. I don't have anything cool like the rest of these guys. I just like hanging out with them.
And of course, I'm Nick Hoffman, Riffer on Cineprov with these beautiful people.
Stop.
My Kroger Plus card number.
Oh, well, humble brag. Somebody's got a Kroger Plus card.
Anyway, I want to appreciate all of you who are listening here. We've had a hell of a year. We're starting our hell of a year 2021.
Woo! Oh, baby!
And by, of course, June, we'll be in our eighth season here.
They said it couldn't be done.
It couldn't be done.
They said it shouldn't be done.
my doctor looked at how much I drink when I do this, and
my
he said no.
Advisor.
No, absolutely not. But of course, I want to thank everyone for listening, everyone for doing this. Sign up for our Patreon because the riff is magnificent and Larry wasn't even here to tell me I should make more rape jokes. So, at the end of the day, thanks. Letterboxd, Facebook, Twitter, reviews. Thanks, guys.
Arrivederci.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Myopia Movies is a production of Do Better Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Sedis. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on contact.com. It is registered under Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Sedis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Reichel. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.